Carl Herman in Mission Viejo, Joe Olson in Houston, Texas, Chris Weiner in Fort Myer, Florida, with the news that you need to know on Wednesday, the 20th of September, the day before the official beginning of fall. All right, our topics for today: guilt by accusation or dictate beyond just Trump, the golden rule, some economics information, and real versus fake death traps. Let's go to the first topic of guilt by accusation beyond just targeting Trump. We have the first story of YouTube just demonetized Russell Brand's channel just for allegations. And I think that this is a precedent of what our opponents want. And they started it with Trump, the idea of disqualifying Trump for an election because he's an insurrectionist without any prosecution, just with an accusation of it. That, of course, is against the American principle of innocent until proven guilty. And they've done that with Russell Brand. Another topic of guilt by accusation. Now, this is some justice. So the guy who was doing the research in Florida proving systemic racism is fired for fraud with his research with falsifying data. Now, that is a big deal because that echoed across all kinds of academic circles. I think they said here his work had been cited in other research an astounding 8,500 occasions. So that means that this guy was considered to be legit, but not anymore. I think I had mentioned earlier when we had It wasn't critical race theory. It was culturally, we had two CRTs, believe it or not, culturally responsive teaching. And my response to that is, was okay to acknowledge their main points, but what we need is critical oligarch theory to understand the big deal is that we're being divided against each other. So I do see this as an expansion of the attempt of our opponents just to be able to have dictatorship. Dictatorship, dictate what you say. So they want us to dance to whatever they say for as long as it's said and for whatever it is that they say. And then when they say something else, we got to accept that. Joe, your thoughts.
Yeah, well, we've got such a completely screwed up system. Today, they're giving a good grilling to Marianne Garlick in the House, and also Merrick, the guy that's the, or Mayorkas, the guy that's in charge of DHS. But absolutely garbage. If you go to the Conservative Treehouse today, top article, DOJ gives Ray Epps the James Wolfe treatment. James Wolfe was assistant underneath, I believe, Warner, the senator that was in the Intelligence Committee that was leaking stuff to his bed buddy over at Washington Post. And she was writing all these classified documents. And everybody's wondering where she was getting it. She was getting it directly from him, all the Russiagate shit that they wanted out. And he ended up getting, like, absolutely nothing for leaking all this these documents. Well, then there's another guy that's been in the headlines lately. DHS Secretary Mayorkas appoints Trump-Russia conspiracy agents. I'll get to that in just a second. But Ray Epps has been sentenced or charged with misdemeanor trespass. And they go after an Oath Keepers guy that wasn't even there that day and give him a 22-year sentence, you know? But yeah, we've got Mayorkas has appointed a group that's going to take over where the Mary Poppins lady that was going to be in charge of disinformation was discharged because everybody found out what a deep state worm she was. Well, here's what they're proposing for this new government oversight branch. This is still the count one district. This is Ray Epps. Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, here we go. He's appointed a committee, including James Clapper, DNI, John Brennan, CIA, Tashina Gubar, DOJ, NSD, David Chris, DOJ, NSD, FISA Court, Paul Kobe, CIA, Benjamin Witte, Lawfare. You know, bottom line is we have a totally 100% corrupt government. They haven't been able to charge Hunter Biden with anything other than they're going to get him a gun charge where they can get him off because it's no longer illegal to be a drug addict and lie on your drug, on your firearms. And not only that, as long as he's under charge in one court, he can't be subpoenaed for any other reason. And they're going to let the multiple tax evasions and the non-registered foreign stuff expire from statute of limitations. So he can't be charged for any of those crimes that would actually go back and prove links to FJB. But now he's going to get this gun charge and they're going to be able to delay it. And the same clown that came up with the said that he had the right to prosecute him in every jurisdiction, then went to Congress and said, well, actually, you couldn't try him for anything outside of his Maryland district attorney position. And then I turned around and said, I'm just getting some interesting little, I do not blog, I do video. Okay. All right. And bottom line is that they managed to dismiss all of the charges against Hunter Biden and everything that would lead back to Joe Biden. And here they are going hammers and tongs against Trump. And it's just absolutely insane that we have to put up with this so transparently horrible government.
Thank you, Joe. Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, good points. Excellent stuff there, Joe, as far as talking about them using lawfare to defend these accomplices and criminals and conspirators and using the concepts of our legal system, double jeopardy and things of the sort, to protect them and really, like you say, to undercharge him so significantly. It's like giving a mass murderer, serial killer, a jaywalking charge and then basically, you know, running out the clock. I know there's no statute of limitations on murder, but like, you know, theoretically it's the hyperbole, but you get the point. As far as Russell Brand goes, it's interesting that they're going after a 10-year-old rape thing, the allegation that has really not have much evidence and really no repercussions for people making false claims for this. Second of all, they don't really seem to be talking about him by his own admission, talking about being a wrangler of young girls for Jimmy Savile back when he started his career. So, you know, that's kind of funny. They're not going after him for that stuff. They're going after him for the molehills and not the mountains. And I really think it's all part of the show. And anybody that's worth a damn or the real deal is getting hit with the full weight of the law. And all these Judas goats and these federal agents and informants are just running real deal patriots into the buzzsaw left and right. And it's not an accident that they're doing this. They're trying to discourage anybody from taking their constitutionally and Declaration of Independence guaranteed rights, duties to overthrow their government in the face of tyranny or overreach, but certainly constitutional violations. So ultimately, you know, this is like a preemptive strike against any sort of resistance, kind of like the J6 things, the Whitmer kidnappings, the lockdowns. You know what I mean? The people that should be in prison are locking up free people and telling them, you know, because of medical reasons or whatever the hell shit they make up, whatever Gollum enterprise they throw on them. This is very much part of a psychological warfare and IQ test. And certainly, in my opinion, this seems to be a control tactic that they're implying and forcing on the multitudes. And, you know, like I said, it's a bargaining tactic. It's something where they take things away they have no business taking or do things they have no business doing. But seeing how much they can get away with and seeing, you know, how the analytics respond in terms of the socialist media.
Yeah, regarding Russell Brand, I mean, it is a understandable response to say, well, I don't know. Well, maybe he did sexually assault somebody 10, 15, 20 years. You know, maybe he did. But again, the point is that we can point to sufficient lies and crimes of the government so that there is no need to entertain their nonsense anymore, withdraw consent, demand their arrests, and don't put up with their shenanigans any longer. All right.
Oh, it's really amazing the double standard that men have to put up with. A woman can throw her pills in the toilet, lie to you and say that she's on birth control, force you into a pregnancy and forced marriage that you maybe didn't want to be involved in, and then end up raping you and your child for 18 years in divorce court. But she can also turn around and ex post facto say the consensual sex that you had a decade ago was rape because she wants to dig into your pocket or screw you around again just because she hasn't finished screwing you from when she screwed you 10 years ago. Absolutely insane that we have to put up with this kind of garbage.
If you think about it too, Joe, is they made an entire demographic of the female voter a dependent of the state, where they replaced the father with the state and certainly put them on subsidies and give them favor in terms of custody hearings and certainly EBTs and food stamps and alimony and things like that, child support. So, yeah, this is really creating a group of weaponized narcissists that are certainly repercussion free and having to throw these type of allegations around with no sort of recourse whatsoever. So yeah, take that into consideration. It's a long time to wait for a claim like this to come out, and certainly the timing is very conspicuous. So yeah, I would definitely say that.
Excellent. All right, next, Chris, you had contributed a X Twitter post that it appears that all of the U.S. Treasury gold in the West Point Depository in 1,681 tons is still in a location swap with Bundesbank, and that's their gold, and the New York Fed Vault, and the Bank of England, so that with that location swap, they're saying that all of the gold being guarded at West Point belongs to Germany. And I got two other financial stories, but let's hit on this one first. Chris, please take it away with the points.
All right, good. Well, I'd like to point out that in terms of auditing, I think it's been 1956 since Fort Knox has been audited. So I put that into the point that supports this article. And probably I would also like to add to the supporting of this article that Ronan Manley has been the tip of the spear, the guy that reported this. And he has been right on about just about everything that I can think of he's ever reported. So I really trust the source here. And I really trust his research more than I trust our lying officials. Third of all, if you remember in 2012, I think it was, maybe 2013, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, as a representative of Germany, tried to repatriate like $200 million worth of gold, a fraction of what they have in storage in the United States from World War II. And basically, he was told that they wouldn't be able to do it until the year 2024, over 12 years later. And it was because of 9/11. So in theory, if you think about that, there's a lot of, incongruencies with what was reported, stolen and missing from 9/11 and what truly is. The public never really was told about what was really taken, what wasn't, in terms of the New York and the Fed vaults and the J.P. Morgan vaults. So, this is an interesting situation. If you think about it, J.P. Morgan is a custodian for many of the derivative contracts and many of the EFTs and ETFs and things like that that are out there. So, in a sense, this whole thing can be like a parlor scheme, a Ponzi trick, something where they just keep the distractions moving and focus on maybe having some real gold, but it's a show pile. You know, it's not anything that's the true amount or anything close to that. And I think that's why the United States defaulted on the 1971 exchangeability for gold to the dollar. So, or dollar to gold. So yeah, I think there's a there. I think it's a big there. And, people that don't understand that gold is real money, silver is real money, and everything else is just credit. This is J.P. Morgan himself saying that. So I really like to point these things out because there's, I think, a large evidence front that's going to come crashing down. And I think you're going to really see that the people that have not only outsourced American labor have also, through their instruments, have looted American assets and have restructured them into these BRICS countries. And it's all part of the BRICS Goldman Sachs alliance that was created just before conveniently 9/11. So you can see, if you look in hindsight, them putting these type of plans in motion, the destruction of the dollar and the transition of the American empire into the Far East. So I don't think it's an accident. I think this is why Biden's doing what he's doing in terms of the scripted diplomacy that he's had in the train wrecks that we've seen with that and them surging us into this situation, taking Russia off SWIFT, taking a bunch of their reserves, almost $1 trillion from Russia. And of course, many of the destability tactics they put through, not only through the U.S. military, through NATO, but also through the NGOs and guys like George Soros. So something to think about there, people. There's a big scheme going on here. And I think a lot of it's going to come crashing down. And when it does, it's going to have a magnitude ripple effect that people can't even comprehend.
Yeah, it really is unprecedented. There is a there. The whole system is based on fraud and the Orwellian opposite, debt being called money. Now, just because I have it here, I'm going to give a little history of this. I was cleaning up our garage still. I'm unpacking boxes. I came across this little book, which I had with my stuff, and I want to be able to read this I never have. Concerning dissent and civil disobedience and freedom of speech from a Supreme Court justice after the assassination of Dr. King in 1968. But what I also found are some of the props that I had for teaching about our monetary system. So a little bit of history. This is a, let's see, what year is this? Series of 1917. This is a dollar bill. You're going to see it's a little bit bigger in physical size. And this note is legal tender. And it says, will pay to the bearer $1. And so you could exchange that for gold or silver at the current price. And we have silver certificates. This is a 1935 note. And it also says this certifies that there is deposit in the Treasury of the United States of America, $1. So this is backed. Otherwise, it looks pretty much the same. Got two of those. And then we have a what Kennedy issued in 1963, the red seal of the Treasury Department. And this is a United States note, as opposed to almost identical, but at the top, it says Federal Reserve note with the green seal. And if you are excited about these, you can pick them up. I think it was like $10 to get one of those cheap ones. Joe, your thoughts on what Chris is talking about with the ownership of the gold and the Kabuki theater with gold and money and standards?
Oh, yeah, that wonderful patriot, FDR, the very first thing he did after he was sworn in 1933, which I believe was the end of March, very first thing he did was like first week of April, he did pass the Emergency Banking Act, which outlawed any gold certificates or gold coinage in the United States. And you had like several months to turn everything in. After 6 months, they'd collected 90% of the gold certificates, maybe 95%, and all of the gold coins, which we had $5, $10, and $20 gold pieces. All of those were removed from market. The $20 was an ounce of gold. When they put gold back on the market and allowed you to buy it again, gold bullion was priced at $30 and something. So he had at least a 50% increase in the amount of money that they appropriated. And then under LBJ, I believe it was in 64, one of the first things he did after they snuffed JFK was to outlaw silver coinage. And so prior to then, we had silver dimes that currently are worth $3. We had silver quarters, which are currently worth about $10. And we had silver dollars, which were worth $1 then, which are currently selling for over $30 each. So that's how the bankers rip you off. It's like nothing but constant garbage. And I've got one of those RFK U.S. Treasury sitting in plastic, waiting for the day when I can exchange silver again.
Yeah, it really is criminal. And FDR, he campaigned against the phrase bankster. We got it from him. But as soon as he got elected, he had a little chat with the Federal Reserve people, and he never said anything against the Federal Reserve for the rest of his life. And for that confiscation of gold, nobody took credit for it. FDR just said, oh, yeah, because it was recommended by experts. So it is just a blatant ripoff. It is just by the most ridiculous paper-thin propaganda, and we're still talking about it. Anything else on that topic, or shall we move on, gentlemen?
Yeah, Carl, I got something. Hey, yeah. I would like to also add that there was a wave of governments that were put in, liberal governments, democratic type of governments that were put in, socialist governments, I should say, not only in the United States, but across Europe as a result of the Great Depression in the early 30s. And if you remember, there was even a coup attempt against FDR with Smedley Butler and whatnot. That's a whole different topic in itself. We'll get into that some other day. But I would like to say that the G8 countries at the time, I don't know if they were called G8 or not, but it's basically the same ones, Germany, Japan, United States, Britain, Belgium, whatever, Russia, and a couple other ones. Long story short, Italy, and I think the other one, I'm blanking. But anyways, they were all in a coalition of eight nations that basically went through in third world and Asian and Indian countries in there and basically started confiscating gold and silver from them and getting Europe off the Central Europe off the gold standard too. So this is something that was never really talked about in history books. It leads to what becomes the Kuomintang and the siege of Nanjing in September of 1937, a precursor and the beginning, the source of the real source of World War II was that the Japanese Imperial Army, which is basically a Rothschild proxy, refused to render over the gold to the Swiss bank and to the Bank of International Settlements after they had seized it and spent, I think, 200,000 troops to get it in China, a very hard-fought battle, a very murderous campaign. They basically said because they put most of the troops in there to get most of the gold, they refused to render it over in 1937. And this was what they basically hit the switch on Japan as an enemy. And Germany sided with Japan in terms of that and said that that it should be split by the amount of dedication and resources they put in, you know, the rewards and the spoils. So it was really a behind-the-scenes fight over the amount of gold that each country was going to get from these type of third-world confiscation campaigns. And it was kind of like a precursor to what we're seeing with NATO and all these countries supplying military might and power to these efforts. And it was a banker's directive to seize gold and to get these people off the gold standard to make way for what becomes the World Bank and IMF, the conditions and the terms of peace for World War II.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, and that Japan was weaponized by the British during the U.S. Civil War, and they attacked Russia in 1905 and took over the Western assets of Russia. In order to continue the war against the Tsar, but then they attacked Korea and Manchuria, and then under the direction of the British, they attacked the Chinese because the British only controlled the southern 10 most ports of China, and so they encouraged the Japanese to attack the top of them, and so then Chiang Kai-shek was in a desperate battle against the Japanese, and he was offered safe storage for his gold, and the USS Houston heavy cruiser went up the Yangtze River, loaded up with as much gold as they could get, and brought it back and put it in Fort Knox. And that's what we used to finance, quote, the American Volunteer Group, so he could buy planes from us with gold, and then he'd never get his gold back. Absolute, you know the history of this country, it's absolutely rotten to the core. And everything they tell you in books is just absolute garbage. Go to the YouTube channel, Tales of the American Empire. They've got 130 episodes. All of them are 10 to 15 minutes long. All of them well documented. All of them have archival footage and reference articles. Absolutely stunning. You have been living in a false paradigm reality bounded by faux science, fake history, financed by fiat currency, and run by demonic warlords for your whole entire life.
Yeah, wait, I think the whole independence model, the U.S. independence model, I think, was basically an offering of the British, the London Theater Company, where they have these peerage guys, these cadet branches running the American high places and political theaters. And, of course, delivering this type of oppression across the world. If you look up the Yangtze Patrol, this was a United States Marines detail going back to the 1830s. And it was basically securing the Kohong, basically empirical system for the British East India Company and the Boston Brahmin, who are one and the same. These guys are all from the Harvard Divinity and the Ivy League schools. This is the fraternities and the secret societies and the origins of these guys. It goes a long, long ways, and these guys go across the planet, and they just have these different departmentalizations and, you know, by region or by religion or by, you know, haplogroups or whatever. But this is how they do it, and this is what they do. So look up the Kohong system and look up the Yangtze Patrol, because that's some interesting stuff. Smedley Butler talks about that, and we'll get into that maybe in a later episode coming soon.
As a high school teacher, I enjoyed all of the social studies courses, including world history, and that was to 10th graders. And I would explain to the students that I'm giving you a briefing on what happened in the world before you showed up. And I would conduct the briefing similar to how I would brief members of Congress as a key volunteer with results working for domestic and foreign policy to end poverty. And I framed to the state of the world to these high school students, I said, you had colonization. So these are what we call now the developed countries, the advanced countries. They took all of the world that they possibly could in order to control the resources, both natural and human. And then World War I could be argued that after they had stolen as much as they could from everyone else, they fought each other to steal from each other. And then World War II was a continuation of World War I, and now we're in World War III. And one of the talking points of the developed countries, they say, democracies don't start wars. The fuck they don't. What do you call World War I, World War II? What do you call what we have now? It is the absolute Orwellian opposite. And I'll put into the show notes again, the essay, the 11-parter, I think, is that you can't call the United States a constitutional republic of limited government under the Constitution and supporting inalienable rights. The most accurate description of the United States government in practice is a lying, looting, Orwellian illegal, rogue state empire. All right, let's go on to a couple of other economic studies of the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. So what the U.S. does, the debt rises, is now officially over $33 trillion. Give you some graphs here. And the reason why we have this exponential debt curve is because how we, and then and now I'm talking about as a retired AP macroeconomics teacher, everybody teaches this. How we create what we use for money is as a negative number. It is by issuing credit, a debt. And the reason that it becomes exponential in growth is that if all you ever do is create what we use for money as a negative number, then it's going to become tragically, comically unpayable. And this concept goes back to the Old Testament with the terminology of the Jubilee. The Jubilee in this type of a system, you got to forgive the debt every 50 years, otherwise it becomes tragic comic like we have today in the United States. And it's not just the federal government's debt, it's aggregate debt, it's all the debt. And so something is going to break. This can't go on. And we have two tools that, of course, are ready to go and have been ready to go since Ben Franklin was so excited about it almost 300 years ago. He wrote, hey, if the government is the bank, then you can issue credit, you can issue loans, and then the interest rate, just go ahead and create that amount to directly invest into infrastructure, and you don't have to charge taxes. Simon Johnson, he is an economist at MIT. He's the former chief economist of the IMF, and he says that our economic system is a banana republic, and that nobody debates him. They can't debate because all they have is their talking points and all the facts are on our side. And yet here we are, they're still laughing at us. Let me play this little clip. I don't know if you guys have seen this, or our audience probably haven't. So these are two former Treasury secretaries, and they're here with an assistant Treasury secretary who became the CEO of Facebook, I believe. And they're going to talk about their how they frame poor people as income inequality. And I want you to notice when Hank Paulson gets to the part where he's laughing, they think it's funny. They think it's funny.
We're delighted and honored to have a truly exceptional moderator for this wonderful group of former U.S. Treasury secretaries. And you're in for a very enjoyable hour. So here they are. Carol, all yours.
Thank you. Let's start with income inequality.
Okay.
Yes, please.
So income inequality, this is something I think we've all thought about. You know, I was working on that topic when I was still at Goldman Sachs.
He was a former CEO of Goldman Sachs. Now, Geithner's going to jump in here. He said, I was working on the quality of or the topic of income inequality as the CEO of Goldman Sachs.
And
in which direction?
You're working on increasing it.
And there we go. He thinks that that's funny, income inequality. And we can quantify about 1 million children die from poverty, preventable poverty, every month. And this is this guy's. Who laughs like that?
Yeah, but But in all seriousness, I looked at that as something that was a...
I was serious.
What was a huge issue, and so we talked with economists, you know, matter of fact, with the current chairman of the economic...
And then he just goes on to start bullshitting, and it's not funny anymore, because now he's just given his lines to pretend to virtue signal that he cares. All right. So, Joe, any comments that you have about the U.S. national debt at $33 trillion, tools that are available, the ridiculous Orwellian state that we're in economics? Joe, take it away.
Yeah, since 1913, the Federal Reserve has cost us 3,000% in increased inflation. Yeah, so these are the people you really want running your monetary system. It's nothing but a counterfeit ring. Everything they produce, they create out of thin air, and then they make us pay interest on it. Absolutely absurd. And that's why we have all these clowns in Congress that keep getting paid under the table, and they're not about to stand up and shake the table, because not only do they have enormous number of benefits, they keep finding more benefits. Now they don't even have to pay for their own housing, food, or clothing while they're in Congress. So it's like, give me a freaking break. You already make $180,000 a year. You have the best gold-plated health care possible. You have something so much better than Social Security that you won't even sign up for Social Security. And you get that after just 10 years of, quote, service. And now you're getting yourself free rent and free food. How insane does this have to get before people say it's time to throw the tea in the harbor again?
And insider trading knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Nancy Pelosi is like her trading percentages are higher than most of the most prestigious Wall Street firms. She's batting like 25%. Yeah, she's doing really, really well. I don't think that kind of luck just happens. I don't think kind of fortune just comes upon a public servant, you know. And I think that if they're going to do anything with these 89,000 IRS agents that they're bringing in, they could start with Congress. That would be there's a lot of kickbacks that are being put to people.
Alexander Ocasio Cortez was a broke bartender with $60,000 in student debt when she got elected to Congress. She's been making $180,000 a year for the last 5.5 years. She now has a current assets of $29 million, and she refuses to pay her student loans because she wants Congress to go ahead and pay them for her. This is how insane these people are.
AOC has racked in $29 million in just a couple of years.
Yeah, $29 million because she's authored books and she's got other little perky things. Yeah, absolutely rollover disgusting.
Yeah, maybe she does talks and Goldman Sachs pays her $400,000 for a talk.
Yeah, and here it is. Funny number. Drops out when I talk about investigating Congress for this shit.
She has an economics degree from Austin University, so apparently she understands economics.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, you know, that's the thing. The Keynesians, they have their own world in terms of economics. Talk about the market remaining irrational much longer than anyone can remain solvent. And this is an absolutely designed liquidity crunch. They know that through inflation, taxation, and these type of wage controls and things like that, that they can absolutely crush a population. This is an asset stripping operation from day one. America, the people around the world, you need to see what's going on. This is happening in every country, and it's the same people running the foreign policies and domestic policies in all these countries, and none of them are truly elected, and none of them are truly serving the people. So something's got to give, something's really got to change, or we're going to all be in serious trouble.
Yeah, and the censorship and any alternative voices are squashed. For the AP Macroeconomics College Board, we got about 2,000 teachers teaching AP Macro, and the Listserv Discussion Board, that I have been forbidden for over a decade to introduce any type of current event, anything that isn't on the testable topics. But every once in a while, somebody will ask a question. And a couple of weeks ago, David Anderson, who is an economics professor down south somewhere. I think it, I forget where he is. But he was all excited and said, how's the new school year going? Any suggestions for topics that we should cover? So I had something to say about that with monetary reform and public banking and the data that the 1% now own more than 99% as about 30,000 children die from preventable poverty every day. And he admonished me saying that please stick to appropriate topics. But, you know, when he frames things that are, what do you want to talk about? And say, well, this is what I want to talk about. I mean, you did ask, David. But unfortunately, that statistic of my observation of about 2% of 1 in 50 people are able to engage in facts and 49 out of 50 are sheeple. Currently, among the AP macroeconomics teachers, I got nobody speaking up with me. Over the years, I've had a couple, but nobody right now. They just let that all go into crickets. And they want to talk about supply and demand curves and the other testable topics for AP macro. All right, next, the idea of a fake death trap versus a real death trap. This is the channel of a real estate agent who is on Maui, and he is just, hate to say it, but he's on fire about this topic and being able to demonstrate that this was not a natural fire. And he again goes through interviews of how if they had listened to the police, they would have been dead. They would have had their car exploded while being driven in circles and not being able to get out. And their car would have looked like here, totally fried. That was a real death trap. And I'm optimistic. I mean, a horrible situation, but I'm optimistic that they can get some justice with that. And for a fake death trap, or so it seems, our own Jim Fetzer, Holocaust narrative. And for this, he is quoting a book, and with some of the research that has been gone on, especially to count out that in many countries of the world, it's illegal to challenge this official story. It's the only one. And Jim goes through it as an academic, as a scholar, to be able to demonstrate that, hey, we're talking about three hypotheses for the official story, that it was Hitler who attempted to exterminate the Jews, and they did, 6 million to death. And it was cyanide gas and Zyklon B. And yet, when you take a look at the physical remains of what we see in these death camps by counting up the ovens and taking a look at the physics of Zyklon B, then the story becomes falsified. And it's just as simple as that, is that all of the physical evidence, which counts the most, remember, as a historian, we count physical evidence first, and then documents, and then testimony. And Jim goes through here that it looks like what happened is that in the bombing at the end of World War II, those camps could no longer be supplied, and that they were labor camps. They were not death camps. And in order to cover up crime of allowing these people by bombing to not have any supplies, and plus to demonize the enemy, and to, of course, have a mantle of truth and justice for leading up to what the developed countries are doing today on us, this World War III AMRAP 2.0, they had to, of course, demonize the other side and pretend that the US and the UK were the angels of World War II. Joe, your thoughts?
Yes, well, Maui was definitely a directed energy event, but the problem is we got three different forms of directed energy weapons. You have lasers, which operate in the ultraviolet and infrared spectrums. You have microwaves, which are called masers, which operate in a radio frequency. So those are longer wavelength, lower energy. And then you have plasma, which is using nuclear to project. And bottom line is, it looks like that what they're doing is a combination of these three, and all of them are capable of being weaponized. And I ran across an interesting article. I was doing some research on this by Dr. Simon Michaud, who's a head of the Geological Survey of Finland. And it was an interview that he did on Decouple Media. And one of the things he mentioned was that they're using electrodynamic fragmentation to recycle concrete so that they can break the cement away from the aggregate and not destroy the aggregate. The other methods are chemical abrasion or crushing, and all of those end up destroying a vital part of the recyclable material in concrete. So this is using x-rays to break the cement off of the rock so you can reuse the rock. And a pretty interesting little article. And it has a link to his website where the article is actually posted at researchgate.net. And they use it for microwave weakening, which could also explain how you had weakening in a lot of other concrete structures, maybe the Champlain Towers. And certainly the nuclear reactions in the World Trade Center buildings could cave. So bottom line is, I got a robocall. Don't need to talk it. I'll just okay.
Thank you, Joe. Chris.
Yeah, isn't it something how your phone can tell when you're holding it, and they can give the lead to these robocall places, and they call you right when you pick up your phone? That's something. Anyways, I was going to point out, you know, it's amazing to see how many people will really just silence people that have done extensive research and have gone out of their way to study these things, like history, Carl, yourself, myself, and many others, to recite the official narrative, you know, to basically shush somebody who's done extensive research, who's interviewed people firsthand. You know, I've read thousands of books, have interviewed firsthand, and if not read the firsthand accounts of thousands of people that have been in the operations type of industry, we'll call this, throughout history and throughout many different type of secret societies or empires or things like this, studied it extensively. And I mean, you could show these people cited works and they still won't believe it or don't even care to put it all together. And I would like to point out, in World War II, leading into that, that many of the American industrialists had European factions that they had, corporations that they had basically conjured up, like DuPont and Rockefellers and the Bushes, the Prescotts, whatever, on and on, the Dulles, and on through the British Empire as well. So this was a theater, a pageantry type of war that led to very much a real carnage. And I think that these Masonic orders, all the people at the highest levels of this were the Judeo-Masonic order. They all wear the same type of military commemoration and awards that all looks the same, the Star of Malta, the Star of St. John, whatever you want to call the shit. You know, it's the same guys doing the same shit, and they're purging the fighting age male population. They're keeping it within a manageable range, and they do these things to impose their empires and their future agendas on the backs of widows and orphans. This is something they talk about, they jest about, their kids know about this. I know about this because I studied the shit out of this, and I know more about this than I ever care to want to know. But I'll say that you know, the people that are not part of this shit need to come together and quick and stop taking controlled opposition offerings, people that are part of that shit, because they're just going to lead you into the buzzsaw, into mass depopulation, like they did in World War One and World War Two. And I will say, you hear about 6 million in World War Two, but there was far more carnage that went on around the world leading into that and going in through it. Think about how many people have starved in India and China to feed the Pacific theater. You know, 10 million people in those two populations alone have been lost to starvation and things of the sort. And you know, this is not even talked about in terms of history. So it's amazing to see how many people really will ignore and just recite the official narrative, the tale written by the people that are behind these massive war crimes, let's just say, that usually aggrandizes themselves and comes up with some sort of a justification for these type of mass violence and type of dispossession. So I'd like to point that out, that really you got to look at you know, this like kind of is a butcher shop, and the meat hook reality of it is this is, at the end of the day, what's really going on here. And it doesn't matter how many of these stringers they want to put out from the intel agency. You know, the truth is going to catch up with them, and history's going to tell its tale.
Strong brothers, thank you. Go ahead, Joe.
And I've also read thousands of history and science books and biographies, and found out that they had sealed all of the records from World War II for 50 years, and then they put them out to Presidio in California, and a guy named Dietrich was in charge of burning all the original records because they've all been digitalized. You don't need to have to keep these original copies any longer. So all of the original records have been destroyed. And so the only way you can get the truth is by people that actually interviewed the people that were there. And one of the authors that I really want to promote is a guy named James Hornfisher. He wrote two really good books, one called The Last of the Tin Can Sailors about the Gulf of Leahy. Absolutely stunning book. And it was all based on firsthand testimony and recorded Military Times newspaper from the time when it was actually going on. The other one is The Ship of Ghosts. And this is the story of the guys that were in the USS Houston when it was sunk in the Java Sea in February of 1942. 3,000 sailors, half of them died. The other half were captured by the Japanese. And they're the ones that built the bridge over the River Kwai. Excellent Academy Award winning movie, but it's a lot of Hollywood hype. And it was part of the propaganda that I grew up with when it came out in 1959. Along with Lawrence of Arabia, which was absolutely wonderful. And what Lawrence did was convince the Bedouins that if they fought with the British against the Ottoman Empire and helped blow up the Turks, that they would grant them complete Arab nationality and have their own nation. And they went along with the British. In the meantime, during 1916, the British had signed the Sykes-Picot Agreement, where they were going to split all of the Middle East between France and Britain. Give me a freaking break. The other one, Dr. Zhivago, which showed the absolute ugliness of World War One, and showed the Bolshevik Revolution, what a horrible thing that was for the people of Russia. But, you know, bottom line is you got to get your daily dose of propaganda, and some of it has to have a little bit of truth or it wouldn't make a good movie. Absolutely incredible.
What are the more, and it could go the other way too. Go ahead, Chris.
No, you go, Kyle. You got to go ahead.
One of the movies that a German-produced movie from probably almost 10 years ago was a glorification of the Red Baron. And they had state-of-the-art CGI for these World War One dogfights. And that movie was attacked in the media, including within Germany. And the complaint was, so do you think it's really a good idea to be showing our young men enthusiastic about a war? So they just want to have the official narrative. And once you have a victor, then it is in stone. And as Jim pointed out in the article, the most important, the most vulnerable aspects of the story is that they want to create censorship so deep is that it is illegal. You will go to prison if you even challenge it. So it is just crazy. Anything else on any of those topics, gentlemen, or shall we go to final thoughts?
Lawrence of Arabia won a bunch of Academy Awards in 1962, and Dr. Zhivago won a bunch of Academy Awards in 1965. So that's kind of a six-year window of what Hollywood did to glorify war. But they also had to put in a few negative aspects about it because there were too many people that had lived through it. And the ruling elite would rather have a nation of crippled veterans and orphans and widows, which are easy to rule over, and then they can harvest the next generation. So it's like a generational thing. They just keep running it through the meat grinder so that they can maintain their power by having the alpha males destroyed.
Good points, man. Good points. Yeah, I was going to add to that. Think about the oil interests that were at stake and that were given over to Rothschild or their proxies as a result of World War One, and even what else happens in World War Two with controlling all the banks around the world and putting in the UN to boot. Look at what they're doing with this stuff right now. Look at what they're doing with the CDC, the WHO. The World Economic Forum is basically, you know, a new name for the same shit they have all along. They changed the name, you know, from the Metropolitan Club to the Committee of 300 to the whatever. You know, this is all, you know, the same guys, the same bloodlines doing this, maybe just with different proxies or proxies moved, but Yeah, you got to really think about this and how they run these type of patterns. I was going to say in 1848, they ran a blitz on all of Central Europe and the, you know, the Mazzini and Garibaldi and the, you know, the Masons did that type of stuff. Yeah, it was Pike and these other guys too went on this type of stuff, corresponding to each other, coordinating these type of rounds around the world. And, you know, history looks at it in that region. They don't ever really think this out. They like these connections. These are things that you really got to make for yourself. When you look at all the people involved, you look at their correspondence, you look at what results, what history does, and you know, hindsight is really funny when you look at things and you follow the resources, you follow who gets wealthy.
We lost him. But to tie what he was talking about into Iran in the present with the demonization of their government. Just in 1953, 8 years after the conclusion of World War II, Mossadegh, the political leader of Iran, wanted to renegotiate the oil contracts because Iran was only getting 15% of the profit of their own oil. And he said, hey, if you don't want to renegotiate to the U.S. and the British oil companies, we can just nationalize your properties and confiscate them. And that began Operation Ajax to get rid of that political leader of Iran who wanted to redirect the profits of their own resources to their own people. And that it is just crazy, crazy, crazy. All right, gentlemen, we've been talking for almost an hour. Let's go to our final thoughts. Joe Olson, your final thoughts for today.
Yes. Well, one of the other threat vectors they're using against us is this ridiculous climate change. Fetzer and I have done a 10 tutorial session, hour long each at BitChute. You can go to Joe Olson, climate change. Some of them have been copied by other websites. So I think there's actually 35 listings, but they're all clearly numbered AGW 1 through 10 on the Fetzer site. So that's item number one. The other thing is that I went to a convention out in Las Vegas in July of 2014. By Heartland Institute, and I call it the lukewarmest love fest, where it's a bunch of people going, well, we know carbon dioxide warms the planet, but it only warms it a little bit, and it's not the major thing that's causing it. And so they never could agree on what the major thing was. They wasted $100 billion trying to find the coefficient of a single parameter linear hypothesis based on false anecdotal evidence, and that's what we've squandered all our money on. And it's absolutely insane. But I did happen to meet a guy there who had done a million data points of USGS seismic activity and the NOAA temperature data. And he was able to prove that the El Nino and La Nina, which are the major weather impactors for the United States because this stuff drifts because of the rotation of the Earth from west to east across the United States, the same way the jet stream works. And basically, it has an enormous impact on U.S. weather, but certainly on California weather. And today there's and he had proven that there was a direct volcanic link. Today, Principia Scientific has an article by James Edward Kumis, K-M-I-S, and it's called How Geologic Factors Generate El Nino. He's wrong on a lot of the subtle points of this, which we're gonna get into a discussion with him. But bottom line is he presents some really pretty good convincing evidence. For people that are new to the subject, volcanoes produce 98% of the CO2 in the atmosphere. Has bum freaking nothing to do with your SUV. So get up.
And Joe, you're saying that the volcanoes don't cause the cows to fart more?
Probably not. No, they probably don't make cows fart either.
All right, good, good. All right, Chris, your final thoughts.
Yeah, I will say, just to add to Joe's point, I'll make that my final thought. They are definitely using these things as a shakedown tactic, as a way to control the essentials, things that you need to really sustain yourself and independent from their Cisco logistics infrastructure, their GMOs and their soft skills and things like that. So they're trying to funnel as many low-hanging fruit and as many people as they can towards dependency on their systems, their supplies, their type of of offerings, we'll say. So I think that it's really important that people not only see that, understand it, but try to forge their own alternatives away from these type of things. I think in the long run, if you can just walk away and be independent from these type of systems, you can really just not even have to regard these guys in any sort of importance. But, we're going to have to sort some things out, obviously, beyond that. But I think that these are important ways to start your efforts. And if you're not really focused on things like that, you really should start. And, just community is important. People that are, like-minded. Don't waste your time talking to people that ain't going to listen. Just know people that are and that are of the like mind and gravitate towards those people and really, work from there. And I'd also like to say that there's a lot of people that have inspired me to study what I've known and really give me a heads up on what's happening. And some of them, most of them, as a matter of fact, are no longer with us. And I think probably murdered by their own government. And just to give a few names of people that I think that have been very influential in my research and taking me in at a young age. Eustace Mullins was a good guy. Alan Watt was a great guy. Man, there's a lot of people that I've interacted with. Bill Cooper, I've seen him a few times, in the early 90s. They murdered him on his own front doorstep. There's Michael Rupert. I never met him, but I respect his research. Gary Webb, played hockey, was a good dude. Man, there's so many people that have really inspired me to dig for the truth and to never let that spark get snuffed out by the official narrative and the people that are just reciting it in your face. Because this is really going on and people may not understand it's happening. And it's amazing to see how many people that once you really start talking about this, start to realize that maybe their eyes weren't lying the whole time. And there's a lot of people that don't really make it through this type of gaslighting campaign and they end up, being victims of addiction or murder or things like that. So I really just want to say that people that are taking advantage and the truth for granted, really understand that there's a lot of people that put their lives on the line to bring you this information and have as much respect as you can for that. And really, stand on the shoulders of giants and pass it to the next generation, because ultimately that's how we're going to defend ourselves.
Yeah, and for my final thoughts, after 46 years in the Great Awakening, and the three of us combined have probably over 100 years of paying attention to the most important topics, is that all the facts are on our side. And we are in this tragic comedy, this ongoing Emperor's New Clothes, ridiculous show, but yet we're still talking about it. And hence, my conclusion is that we need some sort of a breakthrough, and a breakthrough from a technical point of view, that something that's going to happen that is outside of our apparent ability to orchestrate, to create. We keep doing the best we can, organizing events and working with the facts and getting ever more powerful and cogent with the documentation to explain, document, and prove the official lies and crimes. But yet, here we are still talking about it. And for me, my deadline for something to occur, and I think that it could occur anytime, but if we don't have an honest election in 24 and a breakthrough for the truth, then I'm going to go back on some sort of a campaign. And I'm highly, given what we see right now, still with this 2% able to hang with us and to be able to discuss these facts, I'm more inclined to some sort of martyr mission at that point, because the concept of withdrawing consent is that at that point, projected upon where I am today, I'll withdraw consent with our creator to endure this any further, and I'll maximize the use of my own life for the case of the truth. Now, we'll see what happens between now and then. It still could break any time, but we shall see. All right, Patriots, thank you for your attention. Thank you for your intellectual integrity and moral courage, and we'll be back again with more of the news that you need to know on Friday.